Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom. I am Josh Beiser, and tonight we are going back to a topic that we were originally going to talk about a few months ago during the first Game Wisdom Developer Roundtable cast. And this was a topic we were going to focus on with educational games, which unfortunately that cast ran long. But fortunately, we have a new panel of some old and new guests here to talk about with me tonight. So let's introduce them. First, lead designer and owner for Artisans, Charles Amos.
Hello, everybody.
From Zachtronics, owner and lead designer, Zach Barth.
Hey.
And a new guest tonight, he works, well, I'm going to let him introduce himself because he has a pretty nice title. Please welcome Matthew Burns.
Hi, everyone. I work at the Center for Game Science at the University of Washington.
Awesome. So he definitely has some interesting discussions for us for educational games tonight. And he also did the music for Infinite Factory. Is that right,
yes.
Zach?
Yeah.
That's right.
We're buddies.
Yeah. So this should be a great cast all around. So to get started with, Zach, since you were the one who originally pitched this topic for the roundtable a few months ago, could you tell us a little bit about what made the topic stand out for you that you wanted to discuss with us?
Yeah. So, it's been a couple of years. So a couple years ago, we started Zachtronics. And after making SpaceChem, one of the things that we sort of realized, and by we, I mean me and Keith, who is another, he started Zachtronics with me. We do a lot of design together. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we were thinking is that, like, SpaceChem is not educational, but imagine if it was, you know? Like, could you make a game that's a sort of as compelling and intrinsically interesting as SpaceChem, but actually educational? And so you could use it, you could sell it to schools. Just imagine all the money you could make as a joke. But yeah. Yeah, so we wanted to do this, but we never really got the chance because the more we started looking into it, we couldn't figure out like how on earth we would ever make any money making an educational game and selling it to schools. Like, schools don't want to buy from somebody like us, and so we kind of gave up on it. And then a year later, we were approached by a company called Wireless Generation that made educational software about making some educational games for a tablet-based curriculum they were putting together as indie developers. So they knew that we had made SpaceChem. They knew that we were not a commercial educational games developer, but they wanted to see what we could come up with. And they went after a bunch of other indies too and got them to make cool stuff too. And so we made three educational games for them. And I was really excited about educational games. I was totally of the mind that, you know, this is what education needed was games, because games are really cool and interactive. Mm-hmm. And so we made these games, but it's something that I'm still passionate about, but a little bit torn, honestly. And that's sort of why I wanted to talk about it. And that's why I sort of talked to everybody about it. I was at GDC a couple weeks ago and I ended up talking to a lot of people about it, because on one hand, they do seem like they have a lot of potential. But on the other hand, there's so many things that just go wrong when you try to make educational games and trying to make them, you know, trying to fit them into curriculums and trying to like fit them into people's expectations of what games do. And I don't know what the answer is, but I figured it would be a good conversation topic because of that.
Cool. And you just brought up a really good point, Zach, about trying to like fit like games into the educational curriculum. And that sort of takes me to my first like general question. I think this could either be for you or for the group as well. And that is, how would you define an educational game in, I guess, today's market or just in general? Because for my background, I remember growing up and playing stuff like The Learning Company, Broderbund, and those types of games that had a lot. They were definitely focused on education. I think all the Learning Company games I played dealt with like math topics, and they had like a very loose sense of gameplay or design to them, but it was primarily focused on trying to teach, you know, basic math, algebra, and so on.
Yeah, definitely. I'll lead in if that's okay with you guys. Yeah, I mean, I know when I was a kid, I played tons of educational games, and some of them were more like what you see, like Math Blasters and stuff, that were much more like topic heavy, and some of them were really didn't remotely fit into a curriculum, but were still kind of educational games, like the Dr. Brain puzzle solving games, and there was this whole gamut of sort of just educational games, and yeah, I mean, the thing nowadays, I guess I'm coming at it as like somebody creating it, is there definitely is a market for educational games of some shape, selling them to schools, but there's very much an emphasis on how they fit into curriculums. And like this is sort of just my personal impression of it. It used to be that just any kind of game that was somewhat educational, you could kind of get away with. And now I guess you still technically can, but in terms of schools and stuff, especially with Common Core curriculum, that there actually is like approaching something that's like a common curriculum in the United States. People really want the games to line up with that. I don't I don't know if that answers your question.
I think it does, and I think I want to talk a little bit more about the curriculum in a second, but Charles and Matthew, do you have any thoughts on the side about what is an educational game?
Certainly. although I do work for Artisans now, I used to work for Eline Media, which specifically makes educational games, and I was the game design lead on GameStar Mechanic, which is played in a bunch of schools, and I think it's a great example of an educational game done well, and it's quite a bit different than the stuff we grew up with. It's not Math Blasters. But in working on those projects and working with Eline and thinking about what are educational games now, what did they used to be, and what should they be in the future, what could they be, something that we reconfirmed again and again is just that all games are educational in the sense that games just teach people things. That's part of what they do as games. You come into it, you don't know how to play it. It teaches you how to play it. It then challenges you to prove that you've learned how to play it. You know, like, so all of the things that we associate with education, you know, not having knowledge, gaining mastery, assessing that you've learned things, like, that's what games do. They just aren't usually teaching things that schools want to teach people. You know, they're teaching them how to, you know, drive a car in Grand Theft Auto. But, you know, that's not what we want to teach people. So
taxonomy of Pokemon. That's the example we always use.
Right. So really, when we say an educational game, we're talking about aligning games with traditional school education, right? And teaching things from curriculum, state standards. And an educational game is a really, I think, sort of what we mean is a game that's used in schools.
Okay.
I think that is it an educational game if schools aren't using it? Yeah, maybe. But like that's not really a market that exists. Nobody buys an educational game just to have it at home.
Did people used to? I was trying to think
Carmen
about
San
this.
Diego, you know, like was that
like a lot of? I think there was like I guess I don't know how much of the market was selling to parents like 20 years ago.
Right.
But it was definitely happening. I mean, I remember going to CompUSA and looking at all just the shelf, you know, that was back when you bought games in stores and they had tons of educational games on the shelves there.
Yeah, and they'd be attractive to parents like you're saying.
Yeah.
I think that's gone. I think it is too.
Well, I think that there's still some, you know, in like in the App Store, there are still some apps that claim to be educational, and they're sort of marketed a little bit to parents who want to give their children kind of games that feel educational.
Yeah. It's a smaller scale though than it used to be.
Yeah.
I guess it seems.
Yeah, I remember. Well, I just want to bring this up quickly. I remember back in the day, I used to buy like the logic-based ones. I bought like Zubinis.
Yeah.
And I did buy like a few of the Learning Company games. I cannot, for the life of me, remember they are. Did you guys ever play The Island of Dr. Quandary? That was like a logic.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was definitely a market for it, but I am somewhat conflicted as Zach is about whether or not there is a strong market. But I know, Matt, you were about to say something, so go ahead.
Yeah, so I think that, like, there is definitely still a market for, like, parents to give their children something. But I also think that what Chris was saying is right, which is that in order for a game, or sorry, not Chris, Charles was saying was right, is that in order for a game to be used in schools, teachers want to know that the game is actually teaching something that they are responsible for. Mm-hmm. Teachers are judged on their ability to give kids a sense of knowledge of what the curriculum is. And it's set in stone, whether it's Common Core or not. The curriculum is determined by either Common Core or by the school district or by the school itself. And so teachers need to know, you know, when they implement a game in the classroom, they need to know that the game is teaching these specific things. Mm-hmm. And they also want proof. They want test results that show that kids have learned the concepts from playing the game. And that's kind of an area where educational games today run into a little bit of trouble, because educational games don't necessarily, as far as we've seen so far, they do not dramatically improve test scores if you just put a game in front of a kid for a little while. And of course, the argument against that is, you know, the game is not teaching to the test. It's teaching its concepts in its own way, and the test is not a good way of seeing if the kid has learned from the game. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, it's still difficult to introduce, as Zach was saying, it's difficult to introduce games into this educational system that's built for something a little bit orthogonal to what the game is doing.
Okay. And that sort of takes me back to what I was going to ask Zach about, and that is regarding creating the game and having it aligned to the curriculum. What kind of examples, or do you have anything that people would be interested in hearing about, like some of the challenges of trying to design a game to meet a school curriculum?
So the only reason, so we made three games for Amplify, mm-hmm. and the interesting thing about their policy is that the games were not tied to the curriculum.
Okay.
In fact, the games were, the way the games like kind of come up in the curriculum is that they're just installed on these tablets, and no adult, like ideally, should ever tell a kid to go play one of these games. They're just there waiting to be discovered mm-hmm. and enjoyed. Which is very different from how everybody else is deploying these sort of, like, you know, the people who are deploying games, educational games, trying to productize them. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are very much focusing more in on the curriculum stuff. And so we actually had a lot of freedom. And we were able to, honestly, I would say kind of go with more of like an old school educational games approach where we just sort of went out and found stuff that was interesting and educational and built a game around it. And in some places, it probably lines up with curriculum. Like we did a game about ecosystems and, you know, like trophic levels and that kind of stuff. You know, mm-hmm. Trophic levels, food pyramids, food webs. We picked all of that because it was interesting and kind of lines up with stuff that's in the curriculum. But at no point did we ever like go through curriculum bullet points and try to match it up to it. And I think it really killed like all of the fun and the creativity of the game design process to doing that. And there's just no way we could have, like, we would have ended up coming up with something that was more like test-based. I don't know. I don't know what it would have been if we had tried to do that, but I don't mm-hmm. think it would have made the game better. I don't think it would have made the game more fun.
And it seems like certain topics would be better suited for trying to be like educational slanted, not exactly like pure educational, as you said, Zach, focusing on the curriculum, but focusing on interesting topics. I remember back in fourth grade, I played this game. I cannot remember the name of it. It was all about how electricity worked and how you had to like understand like the different voltages and trying to align like right power to the right device that needed it. And again, that was something that had nothing to do with any curriculum that I was learning, but it was about an interesting topic, and it was presented in a way that you could apply game mechanics, or at least basic game systems to it, to try and teach someone.
Yeah, we liked science the most. Mm-hmm. Because it gives you systems, but it doesn't like exactly lay out like what your game has to be like, versus math. Mm-hmm. Like math is pretty strict about what it is mm-hmm. and how it has to be done.
Yeah. Now, here's a question, I guess this could be for the group, and that has to do with games that could have, like, historical slants, or could teach people about, like, how things were. Like, I remember probably a good example would be, like, the Oregon Trail back in the day. Would these types of games that could focus on, like, historical aspects could be considered educational if they were applied right? And I'm thinking of an example recently. There was a Kickstarter, like, a year or so ago for a game about Lewis and Clark.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was sort of where my thought was going.
What about, like, Assassin's Creed?
That's a good question. What is the group thing about that?
I mean, I know they have some inaccuracies, but, I mean, they do certainly hit on a lot of things that are true-ish. Mm-hmm. There's the
yeah,
idea
I
that
think
the thing...
Assassin's Creed is interesting because it lets you explore on your own a historically based environment, which is definitely has some value on its own. Mm-hmm. There are some academic projects that are, like, a virtual recreation of ancient Rome, the city of ancient Rome, for example, that you can wander around that's based on real maps mm-hmm. Of Rome and things like that. And so something like that, I definitely think has some educational value and maybe some educational outreach value as well, right? Like mm-hmm. a fun game about a topic doesn't necessarily have to impart a lot of facts if it just gets people interested in the topic. That's another thing that people who make educational games try to pursue, you know.
That's something I hear a lot of people say, just sort of as a fallback. Well, it's like, well, at least it'll get people interested in things. Because mm-hmm.
right,
I guess
because
it's
that's
true.
A lot.
I
mean, that's all you can claim realistically mm-hmm. in a lot of situations, because you can't sit down in front of someone in front of Assassin's Creed and then give them a history test, and they won't do any better on the history test, mm-hmm. you know, after playing it. And like I was saying before about like math, there isn't a ton of evidence to show that games about math necessarily improve performance on that, unless the game is just a very thinly veiled like math test or math drills, right?
And then it's probably pretty bad as a game.
Correct. Yeah, and then it's not. It makes, you know, game designers aren't very interested in it because it's really just kind of like a math test that you take with sort of game like little fireworks on top of it.
Mm-hmm. And Charles, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah. Well, one is just that tests are games. They're just really bad games. I mean, rightly, you come into it. There's a challenge. Question number one, A, B, or C? B. I think it's B, based on prior knowledge that I've gained from somewhere through some process. but it's not supplied in this game. No way to figure it out from here. And then by the end, you get a score. I mean, it's their games. So it's funny when we assess the work that another game has done by using a crappy game to then assess that game. Like, that doesn't make sense. Yeah. But I think probably the best educational game I've ever played is Civilization, the whole series. And it's an interesting case study because it's obviously it's not marketed as an educational game. Everyone knows, yeah, there's history in there, but like it's so anachronistic. You've got Napoleon fighting Genghis Khan. Like, what could you possibly really learn there?
That's actually a really interesting point you made, Charles, about Civilization, because I remember, like 7-8 years ago, I was working at like GameStop part-time, and this teacher came in. She wanted a good game that she could show her kids about history, and I actually mentioned that, you know, Civilization, that could be used, because it's all about like the history of civilization and all that. So it's funny, that's a great coincidence about that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's a movement of teachers who, instead of pursuing educational games, look for off-the-shelf games to use in their classrooms to illustrate points. And so that's where they would pull out something like Civilization or Assassin's Creed. There's a site, there's at least one site out there that reviews games for that purpose.
Would you happen to know that? Because I could put that in the podcast notes.
Search for it online.
So I want to ask, kind of based on that, what kinds of things do you think Civilization teaches?
I think it has... two angles to it. So one is that it can do that thing that Zach was talking about, get you excited about a topic, right? So I am playing as America and I'm up against Russia, and I see that it's Russia is led by Catherine. I don't know who Catherine is. She seems interesting. I look her up. Either I look her up on Wikipedia, or I use the actually pretty fantastic encyclopedia built within Civ, which is incredible. And so there's that little connective seed of just, hey, this fun game got me interested in this other topic. And then I went off on my own and I learned in another traditional way. But there's something beyond that too, which is about something broader about human civilization in general and how conflicts form in the first place that you can learn from actually being in those conflicts in Civ, where you need oil to create your own planes because there's a threat from the north, but you don't own any oil, but you know someone who does. And so you go over to their country and you chat them up and you give them some money and you like try to be their ally. And then you're like, wait a second, this is actually happening in our world too. And now I can understand the incentives for why governments act the way they do. And that's a kind of learning I don't know how you get any other way except by experiencing it yourself, especially with the randomly generated maps and scenarios in Civ. The stories that emerge just from those random initial conditions are, I think, incredibly educational for understanding the ways in which history has functioned, culture has developed. You know, thinking of what did it mean for the Mongols to have horses and to have so many horses? What did that do to their military? What did that do to the places they expanded into? And you see that happen through the relatively simple game mechanics of Civ. They just have so many mechanics, so many elements that all come together to form these very complex relationships. That's where the education comes from Civ for me.
Okay. Interesting about that, yeah. Now, here's the question. Since we've been talking about getting games into the classroom or using them to help teach kids, I think this next one is probably aimed more towards Matt's expertise, but feel free, Zach and Charles, to jump in as well. But we've been talking about trying to get these games into classrooms and trying to get them in front of kids. But from like the studies that you've done and just like, I guess, working on these types of games, what's like the general like age range that educational games are usually aimed towards, if there is one?
Well, yeah, they can vary quite a bit. The ones that we've worked on are mostly K through 12.
Okay.
So grade school and then up into kind of doing linear algebra and stuff like that. But I mean, I think games can be educational throughout a person's life, generally speaking, right? Like the kinds of things that Charles was talking about with Civilization are applicable to a person of any age, really. Mm-hmm. But the research that we've done and the populations that we've worked with where I work are mostly grade school. I would say like grade 3 through 7 or 8 is kind of the main area that we focused on, because we do these math learning games.
Okay. And here's, I guess, another question, I guess, for the group. We've talked about already some of the topics that would fit and are a little bit harder to fit into educational games. We mentioned, of course, science as a good example of one that does, math as one that's a little bit harder. But for the group itself, are there any other topics that you guys can think of that would be strong cases for educational games or would not be strong cases?
Well, so okay, sorry to take this one again, but I think that almost any topic is really great for an educational game. Mm-hmm. And that there are tons of topics out there that you can make educational games about. The problem is that in our educational system today, we have a very, very strong focus on testing. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of the evaluation of educational games comes around to will it improve test scores or not? So if you have games that are around really interesting things like civilization, like the relationship between nations, how would you write a test that tested what kids learned from playing Civilization? Mm-hmm. If you start thinking about that, it's actually very difficult.
Yeah.
You can't actually just write a test that tests for knowledge of that. At least I can't think of a way. So in that case, like, I think educational games are more or less suited to different domains of knowledge because they are not because the games themselves are really suited to them so much as in our current educational climate, it's easier to test for math or science, right? Because it's like you either you get it or mm-hmm. you don't. But you can't really give like a test for did you learn empathy or did you learn what it's like to be the Russian Empire in the 17th century or any of those kinds of things. Like those are much more difficult to capture. And so that's
more
why
subjective too.
They're right. Exactly. They're more subjective. So when you get away from math and science and you get into the arts and letters, I think that it's harder to definitively prove, and I use prove in quotes, prove that the games were educational. And that's why I think those have had like a little bit less interest and a little bit less like funding from large organizations and those kinds of things.
Okay.
It's sort of a problem in general too. I mean, we spent a lot of time here, like me and Keith, I guess, talking about educational games. And the thing that we sort of decided might be better than educational games are using projects. And so, you know, taking a bunch of kids and setting them loose and say, like, go write a software application that does something, you know, mm-hmm. and or setting them loose, you know, like a real life project where you just have to go learn. You have to go learn whatever you need in order to accomplish the project. And everything that you do is contextual. So it's not just here are five math problems, solve them. It's like, oh, yeah, you might come against some math, you know, in the process, you know, and then you can do the math when you come across it, and it's more authentic and more like it means something because it has context. But even then, like, how would you test that any of that worked? It's in the mm-hmm. current system, you'd give them a standardized test, which is like the opposite of doing a project-based thing like that. So it's more of a problem. It's a problem for more than just games, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And Charles, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I find it frustrating. I understand it's sort of the basic three-part chunk, I think, to education is what do we teach, how do we teach it, and how do we assess that it's been taught, mm-hmm. right? And we're not too bad on the first. We sort of think we know what to teach, although more and more we are emphasizing this sort of subjective, soft, skilly stuff of that's harder to know how to teach and how to assess. So we get ourselves into trouble. But we really want to educate people on these softer skills. How to teach them? Okay, one of our ways is we're going to try games. Games are pretty cool learning systems. They are really attractive to kids. They are interactive at their core, which is becoming more popular. And then we get totally stuck on the assessment piece, in part because we're trying to assess the work that a game is doing, even though the game itself has assessment built into it. That's what challenges are. This is not true, but wouldn't it be great if it were? That the way I would assess whether or not you've learned the relationship between nations is, did you win in Civ? Mm. that's not the case. You could win in Civ without having learned anything about yeah. the relationship between nations, but build it into the game, right? And then you can even have gradations in the assessment, because not only do we want to assess whether a kid has mastered something or has learned it, we also want to compare them to the kid next to them. He got an A, she got a B, that kind of thing, which gets you into some hairy territory. But it's territory games love. Games love scoreboards and leaderboards and mm-hmm. comparing people directly against each other, even though they're not you know, we're not just assessing, oh, are you good at, have you learned how to play League of Legends? Well, yes, but, you know, how often do you win? Who do you win against? Who do you play as? That we do have complicated assessment features in game. So to then break outside the game and use our old testing system to try to assess our new learning systems is, that's just broken logic, but it's the only way we know how to do things currently. Mm-hmm. And we trust the grades on the tests, even though maybe those questions on the tests aren't very good, but it pumps out, you know, a 98, it pumps out a 66, and we can say, look, that proves it right there, even though everyone who's involved in testing, making tests, taking tests, giving them to kids, teaching to them, they know that it's all, you know, smoke and mirrors. So we do our best, but our best isn't great because the I think the fundamental truth behind testing is that it pretends like it's accurately assessed someone, but it's only as good as all the junk that went into the whole process.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good point, Charles. And it goes back to what Zach was saying a few minutes ago regarding, in terms of trying to teach someone something that's subjective, is to build it around like a project, like give them a task and see they complete it using what they've learned. And it reminded me of some games that I've been looking at that have been going that route of these big projects or giving the player a very big toolbox of mechanics and things to learn and then see if they can apply them. And the two games that are coming to my mind right now would be Kerbal Space Program and this game called Besiege, which is an early access. Now, Besiege is, of course, rated M, but it has to do a lot of mechanics of trying to build vehicles, understand how joints and stuff connect. And, of course, Kerbal Space Program is essentially a build-your-own space center with rocket physics or rocket science. So with these types of games that are basically giving players like a huge toolbox and saying, okay, figure it out, then, you know, try to build something with it or try to go the distance. What do you guys think about these types of open-ended projects as sort of like a loose form of an educational game?
I mean, that's sort of with all of the stuff we make, right? Like Space Chem and Infinifactory, that's exactly the formula that we follow. Yeah. And it's sort of, we stopped making educational games and decided just to focus on this because I think we can do more in the realm of, like, you know, you know, like pseudo-educational stuff with making games like this. Enriching, thought-provoking games that sort of give you an open problem and let you solve it however you want and start thinking, you know, like engineering skills, kind of. I don't want to say it's educational, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think those kinds of sandbox-style experiences are really great and can lead to a lot of really great things.
21st century skills.
That's right, STEM! Core stuff.
Now, we talked earlier in the cast about like logic-based games, stuff like the Zumbinis, Island of Dr. Quandary, those types of games that we played growing up, that again, they didn't really stick to a quote-unquote lesson plan or testing, but dealt with like a very subjective topic of critical thinking and logic. With those types of games, again, as we've said, there's the challenge of trying to quote-unquote teach the test. But would logic-based games be also another realm where educational games could sort of grow or even grow from?
Who wants to take that?
I think that they can. Like, so when I was saying that we haven't seen games actually improve test scores, it's because of what Charles was saying. Like the games actually are great at teaching kids to be better at playing a game. What happens after that is the problem. Even if your game is about like algebra, for example, and then you have a kid play an algebra game and then you put an algebra test in front of them, the transfer is the problem. The transfer of doing algebra in a game, which works in one certain way, versus doing it on pencil and paper, which you have to teach all over again because it's like you have to cancel things out with your pencil and you have to rewrite the equation. Those are all things that you don't have to do when algebra is kind of represented in this game-like form. So games themselves are fantastic at teaching players to be better at the games. And so by creating a system in a game that works in a way that's analogous to something that you want someone to be better at, you just have to take care that the activity transfers over. Like if you're trying to teach someone something, you have to show how the what they're doing in the game actually does relate to real life. There's a connecting piece there. And that's the piece that I think where a physical human teacher really is important to the process.
I agree.
There's this idea that like you can there's this maybe this idea that like you can just sit a kid in front of a game and then they automatically learn stuff, but I really think that's not the case. Like there's definitely some good things about like non-directed, completely self-directed exploration, but there's also really important part that the teacher plays even in using games, which is that like setting the stage for the game, talking about what you're going to see in the game, and then talking about what we learned from the game and then how that applies to the real to real life.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point of the connection between the what the game's teaching, and then I mean that is sort of what we want to get at with assessment, right? Is like, can you apply this to real life and other situations that aren't like the game? Or like, why did we even teach you this in the first place? What value does it have? Whether it's like that you've picked up a skill you can now use to create your own things, or it's you know, something that you need just to know as a human in society. And also your point on teachers and the importance of them. Although I am so yay rah rah games, it is frustrating when I hear people be like, oh, we're going to totally replace the school system with these like online tutorial and, you know, interactive experiences. Like, teachers have been around forever, for one thing, and they have a craft. And they are, you know, a good teacher is amazing. What they can do, not only just their classroom management, all that basic, those basic skills, but then actually how they educate a person. And they know what to teach, how to teach it, how to assess it's been taught. And then they have to often are frustrated in proving it to the state or even just their bosses, when they know in their gut, like, this student gets it, this student doesn't, this student's struggling, but like has made a lot of progress. Like they know the nuance there, and they're so good at facilitating that process and meeting kids where they're at. Like, oh, I know exactly why Susie's confused. Like, here's, I'm going to unlock that for you and then help you through that. Teachers. Awesome.
Very good point, Charles, about teaching, about trying to, like, a good teacher can really make these lessons interesting. And while we've been talking about subjective and trying to figure out best ways to test or see if someone can understand the mechanics, it brought up another memory of when I was younger with trying to learn through games. And probably one of the better games that I played would probably be like the SimCity series back in, wow, I think it was like 96, I think I played SimCity 2000, around there. And trying to understand like the ideas of city management, pollution, power, these types of things, was a very interesting thing as a child, trying to pick up on all that using the city building method of trying to, you know, get all these different systems and parts of your city to basically coalesce together and function as a whole. And I think this again goes back to what we've been getting at with trying to teach someone, not exactly to a test, but teaching to like their thinking, trying to get them interested in these topics so that they can go on and learn on their own, in a sense. I know, Charles, you mentioned earlier with Civilization as an example, with like the Civipedia, and basically laying the seed or the groundwork for these types of lessons once they've gotten interested in like history or, you know, how oil works or the importance of masonry back in the day.
Yeah, one thing that GameStar Mechanic does is, yes, it's an educational game, teaches systems thinking, game design itself, and it can teach some other systems-based things like food chain and ecologies and whatnot, you know, using the systems in place. But the way it's used in schools is with a paired curriculum that is separate from the game, and the teacher uses that curriculum in part with GameStar. So he or she is, you know, has the kids play a little GameStar lesson after having introduced it, but then also with aided by the curriculum can tie it to the real world and other systems that are outside of the game. So in that sense, the teacher is critical. They're using the software just as one of their tools. It's just sort of a better textbook, or it's an interactive textbook, right?
Yeah.
The game doesn't have to bear the entire weight of a child's education.
Yeah.
And the teacher is still able to use it flexibly, pick and choose what they like, focus on certain things, come up with their own examples, and be aided by the curriculum. So I think a great educational game used in schools, I think, should always be paired with essentially teacher support and teacher buy-in.
Okay. Zach, Matthew, do you have any thoughts on that?
I agree with that. I think games on their I agree. No, the games on their own, I don't think it, I mean, if you're comparing it to like a more traditional educational setting, I think that the having a teacher there is very useful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that definitely benefits if you're using games in the classroom, if you can manage, I guess.
Okay.
It's sort of like a rare thing using games in the classroom, just because, and so this can kind of tie into what Matthew does, what they're working on right now at UW, but like it's risky using games in the classroom because classroom time is not something that teachers have a lot of, and mm-hmm. games are not something that is exactly like quick and to the point.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of like a risky thing in general. Mm-hmm. You should talk about your project, Matthew. It's interesting.
They do make pretty great homework, though. I'll throw
yeah,
that
yeah.
Yeah, unless playing a game is definitely too. a good exercise for homework. So our project has to do with kind of taking games and placing them in a larger context of learning as well. So we have these games that we've developed, but we don't want kids to just sit in front of the games for an hour and then play the games and then walk away. So what we have is a system that allows teachers to show kids what to do in the games. To see what kids are doing in the games all at a glance. Mm-hmm. So if you imagine a classroom where kids are all playing games on tablets, the teacher can see what the kids are doing in their games from the teacher's tablet and then see if someone is struggling with a specific concept and help them immediately with that immediate feedback. So that the teacher isn't waiting for example, the results from a test to see that a certain student doesn't get a certain concept, but can immediately, talk to a kid about what they're doing in the game and step through their reasoning and help them understand the concept. So it's this idea of like games sort of in context, games as a way to elucidate what kids understand, what they don't understand yet, what level they're at, and what needs remediation immediately is the thing that we're kind of working towards right now.
Very interesting, Matthew. And that getting that instant feedback, I think that's not only important for education, but I think that's something that a lot of strategy or 4X game designers also should follow as well.
Because, all game designers.
Yeah.
Feedback is very important, closing the feedback loop.
Definitely, Zach. And as I was just saying, that for a lot of like the more complicated games out there, one of the problems is that it takes too long to show your feedback to your decision. When you're trying to learn a game like Europa Universalis or Crusader Kings, you make an action, it can take, 30, 40 minutes of real time before you actually see the response from that. And by that point, the user has already, completely forgotten or it's been locked back in their head. They're not going to remember, how did what I did 40 minutes ago affected this? And I think having that instant feedback and having someone be able to monitor and assist someone in learning, I think that could really do a lot to help them learn, not just in education, but in just general game design as well.
I agree.
Thank you.
I agree too. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is something we like back in a games land for a second, like with Space Chem, one of the big problems with it is that, you start designing your program and then eventually later you run it. And there's sort of that time delay between when you made your changes and when you run it and you see what your changes actually did. Yeah. And that's
sounds
one of the
like
big
programming.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the big problems. And that's something we tried to, we sort of toyed with the idea for InfiniFactory of making it that it's always running. And as you change it, like it just keeps running. And just you instantly see the changes, but there's a lot of state in InfiniFactory, and so we never really figured out a good way to do that without it being like a colossal pain in the ass.
Yeah, incidentally for InfiniFactory, I did a video on it, and I was basically talking about why it's easier for me to process that compared to Space Chem, is because of that instant feedback of building your machine. My thought process: I basically build my machine in steps. I go, okay, first I need to get parts to A. So I'm going to focus on that for 20, 30 minutes. Okay, that's done. Let me test it throughout. Good. Now I need to focus on welding. So let me build this section of my machine. And I basically get that instant feedback of, okay, where are my parts going? What's going on? I use that to build this up step by step. Whereas with Space Chem, as you said, Zach, because you're dealing with this very abstracted concept of the Waldos and the compounds, it's a lot harder to process, okay, just changing this one Waldo, how's that going to affect my entire process?
Oh, yeah. And some people who play Infinite Factory, like, you can kind of split up into two camps, right? Mm-hmm. It's basically, how often do you hit play and watch what happens? And some people will build for minutes at a time without mm-hmm. testing what they just built. And that's crazy because, like, yeah. it's a really awesome way to make it just impossible to play. Like, mm-hmm. Every, like, 20 seconds I'll run and see yeah. what the change is, or more. And really, like, people, I don't think that Infinite Factory teaches you good engineering discipline, but I think it definitely rewards good engineering discipline. And having constant feedback so you can refine your design and iterate quickly definitely is rewarded in that game. And yeah. and people who are good engineers definitely succeed because of that.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't play Infinite Factory and spend, like, 5-10 minutes between running things. I have to run like every 20 yeah. seconds. Okay.
Gotta make sure this is working. Yeah. It's just, you have to. Like, it's just, that's not how engineering requires, you know, feedback.
Yeah, definitely.
That's part of the design loop.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's a question that I've had in the back of my head throughout our cast. I definitely want to ask the group about. And this goes once again back to one of the big walls in terms of education and games, and that is testing, or trying to test someone on these materials or this design. And my topic has to do with what was sort of like the big buzz that happened like around, I think, like 2009, 2010. And that was gamification. Mm. And that whole craze of trying to apply game mechanics and design to like everyday situations or topics. I remember people were talking about having a little game that every time you go and do exercise, you earn, you know, calorie points that you can apply to a character. And there's this whole big wave of people saying, oh, we're going to just turn entire classrooms into, you know, gamification, have, like, little RPGs to teach people math. And I know, Charles, you said a few minutes ago regarding how having an entire curriculum based on video games or based on educational games would be just very much a crazy idea. So for the three of you, what are you... are your thoughts on the whole gamification craze that's sort of, I don't know if it's completely gone, but it's really died down since like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So I think when gamification was around, it was being championed by people who didn't really know what they were talking about. What they really meant by gamification is, hey, there's these things happening in games which are really just interactive incentives, and they are manipulative, and we would like to manipulate people in the ways that these games are manipulating people. So we're going to borrow these little incentive structures and just apply. But like, that's not what games are. That's just something that games do. And
something that games picked up at that time to manipulate people.
It was, I think it had the nature of many fads, which is, hey, there's this new cool thing that I don't understand, but I like this piece of it. Can I just grab that little piece and stick it in the thing that I've already got and get all the benefits? And the answer was, sort of, you can sort of do that. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's an injustice to all that a game is. So that the game, it didn't turn running into a game. It just gave you, incentives for running. If it gives you points, points are not all that games are. You know, like, are there goals? Are there rules?
Yeah. You know,
things that games also have?
It was a pretty bad term. Like, it was just kind of woefully inaccurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
You're not turning it into a game. You're turning it into, like, a reward system.
Yeah.
Sure. And, like, you know, credit card companies have had a reward system. Did they gamify the credit card? Oh, my God. They gamified, like, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was... I think that's why we're seeing it die out, is because it never had legs. It wasn't really alive. It was just a term. But at the same time, what they did want, whatever gamification was, is now ubiquitous. It's so ubiquitous, we don't even have a term for it. Mm-hmm. If like you come out with an app and it doesn't have, you know, some sort of rank bonus point system that you earn over time by doing small activities and achievements, it's like, well, then that's not a contemporary application. Mm-hmm. So although it has died down in the vernacular, the effect that it has had on software in general, and just even just like signing up for an account on some shopping website, like, it's now the whole point reward business is everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Zach, Matthew, any thoughts on gamification?
Yeah, that. I agree.
So, you know, in education, there's the concept of motivation, right? What motivates a student to learn. And sometimes people differentiate them into intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation, right? This happens in game design too, of course. Extrinsic motivation being like if you do your homework, you'll get a cookie, and intrinsic motivation being like if I do my homework, you know, it's fun and interesting, and I'm doing my homework because I like it. Mm-hmm. Gamification is, I think, like Charles said, it was kind of a fad, and it wasn't the concepts in it weren't necessarily new. Mm-hmm. And also, it's a kind of a dangerous concept for the reason that you are replacing things that could be intrinsic motivation with extrinsic motivation. And when you do that, players basically optimize for the thing that you are extrinsically rewarding. If you provide a score, players will find the way to reach the highest score, even if that isn't the behavior you are trying to encourage.
And at the expense of having intrinsic, like losing intrinsic fun.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So one of our areas of research, I'll go over another area of research, but what it is it's trying to reward effort rather than like number of levels played or ability. So if you are just rewarded for your ability, you could potentially play many more levels of like a math game, for example, than someone who wasn't. Mm-hmm. But if you reward based on how much effort they spent, there's the potential that people will be motivated to continue to play even if their skill level isn't as high as someone else, and that means that they've learned something. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is akin to like your teacher saying, giving an award for like the most improved or like worked really hard. Mm-hmm. As opposed to just saying, well, you're really good at this and other people are not good at it, and it's in their interest to not do it because they're not good at it. That's something that happens to in math a lot, which is that kids who don't get over a certain hump in math just decide that they are not math people. Mm-hmm. And then for the rest of their lives, they're just like, I just don't do math.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's a really great point about that and the intrinsic versus extrinsic reward system. And I think that sort of goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago with how a lot of these sandbox or open-ended games are really good examples of helping someone learn these mechanics and these rules. Like, again, with like Kerbal Space Program, it's a game that's all about rocket science and trying to figure this stuff out, and there is no quote-unquote reward system in the game, or at least the last time I played. There's no, you know, end goal to reach. There's no achievement system. It's basically how much do you want to put into it, and if someone really starts to enjoy it, they can get a lot of mileage out of the game and at the same time build their understanding of it. And as you said, Matthew, if the understanding isn't there for a lot of people, they may just, you know, quit and say, maybe I'm not a math person. I know for me, I cannot do geometry or statistics. Those things are out of my realm of understanding.
And it's notable with like KSP, that's totally intrinsic. Mm-hmm. And many games are not that way. Like a lot of games have like kind of like RPG progression system sprinkled in because it's like guaranteed to make your game more addictive.
Definitely.
We did a workshop. It was funny, actually. We're running out of time, but I'll be quick. When we were working for Amplify, they paid to have these guys who were like I don't know. There's some company that they come out. You pay them to come out and talk to you and make your games better, and make your games more addictive and make your games sell better because of it. And basically, all like their big things were, you know, give your players autonomy, which I can totally agree with. Mm-hmm. Connect, like allow your players to connect with other human beings and have social interactions, which I agree with. And then add an RPG based progression system to your game because it'll like guarantee
it make your everything.
Yeah, yes. It does.
It's the whole clicker genre right there.
Yeah, just in general. I mean, it's in all games, and that's like a kind of extrinsic motivation that is sprinkled into everything, and it does make it stickier. But I don't know if that does that mean that we should put those in schools, to make everything better. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's also running out of time, because I think we could probably spend like another hour on some of these topics. But I have one final, I guess, general question regarding education games or using them in education, and then we will begin to wrap things up. And I think this question is going to be aimed at you, Matthew, since you do research on this for your day job. So my question is, has there been any interesting research or findings specifically on like development of kids who play video games and their ability to learn versus those who just stick with straight course curriculum and the educational system? Has there been like any tests or findings on that?
So unfortunately, I'm not really an expert on all of the research that has been done on this topic. I really know only like what we do here specifically. Mm-hmm. So I'm not super equipped to talk about that. I will say it's very hard actually to do a study in the educational space. People do it a lot, but there's so many variables that it's extremely difficult to do like, the analogous thing would be like a medical trial where you do a double blind study and you have some people take placebos and you have some people take the medicine. Mm-hmm. In education, it's very, very difficult to do those things. You can't really take two different classrooms and two different teachers and give one classroom an educational game mm-hmm. and have one classroom not use an educational game because the teachers are different, the classroom is different, the kids are different. There's actually a lot of variables that make it very tricky. There's also a kind of a moral question about whether you should give all of the kids in your study the game because it's a good, mm-hmm. you know, it might be beneficial. So if you have kids participate in a study and then you don't give them the game because you're studying the effects versus the game, you know, people mm-hmm. might not be interested in that. So it's actually very, very difficult to like run a very controlled study in this space and say that objectively a game or some kind of technology is better.
All right. And again, I think that's a good point, Matthew, but I was saying in terms of it's very hard to really test people on whether or not these games are working. It's something that I know researchers and a lot of people have been trying to cite for years now. I remember everyone's releasing studies on, you know, video game violence. Is it causing kids to be more violent? Are we more or less since video games came out and so on? And as you're saying, every kid is different. Every classroom is different. And it's hard, probably even impossible, to get a objective results from these types of tests and studies.
Right, yeah. And the factors involved are always so much more complicated than just saying games are good, mm-hmm. games are bad, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of literature, and a lot of the literature doesn't agree with a lot of the other literature. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do a grand survey of all the kind of research that's been done on these kinds of topics, I think you'd find a lot of disagreement and no one real big takeaway that is the answer, you know?
Yeah. Definitely great points, Matthew, and great points for the entire group. It's been a really interesting cast, and this is one of those topics where I would love to do another one of these with you guys later on, whenever we have another free day or whatever, because it is very fascinating. There's a lot of different avenues, not just in terms of educational games, but in terms of making games better to teach people or to get them into, genres that they may not have been able to get into before due to overcomplicated systems or just general mechanic confusion. So to wrap this cast up then, I'm going to give each of you a chance to have final thoughts or anything you'd like to add to this discussion. And we will start with Charles.
All right. Well, I'd like to say that there's a lot of new stuff happening with people sort of studying this problem of how can games be used in education and what's the relationship between those two things? Is there something games can teach schools, vice versa? How can they use them best? Should we just have these educational game designers make software and then the schools use them? Or maybe like a deeper connection? So there's this school called Quest to Learn in New York City that integrates game design philosophy into the entire school. So it's not just that they're using video games to teach like a regular math class, but how can you make the entire educational system game-based, as it were. So they have teams of teachers and game designers together in the classroom, which is super cool. And it's very experimental, but like they've made great strides. They're now a middle school and high school. And they're just one of many. They're Mission Lab, Studio Q, Chicago Quest. And also there is Minecraft EDU, which is classrooms in Minecraft servers. So all the students and the teacher are actually in the Minecraft world together, and they go exploring and the teacher chats with everyone and teaches them concepts in this world that they can build together. That's crazy and awesome. And they can mod it and like form their own classrooms. That's really catching on, spreading in classrooms all over the world. So those are my plugs. I think it's promising stuff. It's easy to get frustrated, but we should keep trying.
Yeah, and Minecraft is, as a quick aside, that's a really good point about a great game to get people into something, get involved in. And that's, another 40-minute, hour-long discussion right there. All right, Zach, you're up next.
I actually don't have much to say. Got it all out earlier. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, then. All right.
Go check out InfiniFactory. It's kind of educational.
There you go.
We are actually pursuing like doing like a sort of like an engineering curriculum that mm-hmm. kind of something that we could maybe deploy to colleges and say, hey, you know, you've got your intro to engineering course. This mm-hmm. game would be perfect for you for teaching how to effectively use like an engineering design feedback loop and stuff. So okay. we'll see how that pans out.
Cool. Good luck with that. And last but not least, Matthew.
I guess I would just say that if you're a game designer and you haven't worked in the educational space, definitely check it out and take a look, because to me, it's one of the most interesting design challenges you can grapple with. There's a lot of interesting directions you could go. There's certain constraints that you have to deal with. It's all very, very interesting. So if you design games, either for a living or just in your spare time or whatever, think about what would really be an educational game. What would actually teach people something. I think that's a great exercise. So that would be my big takeaway that I want to mention.
Awesome. All right. I think with that, we can wrap things up. Again, I would definitely love to talk more about this with you guys later on. We basically had to keep this to an hour just so everyone's schedules could align, because that's always some of the challenges with doing these podcasts. But again, Charles, Zach, Matthew, it's been a pleasure talking tonight, and I hope we can do this real soon.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Thanks.
Yes. Yep. Agreed.
Not a problem. So with that, we're going to wrap things up for this edition of the Perceptive Podcast. As always, if you'd like to contribute to Game Wisdom, we have several options available. For submitting guest pieces or being a future podcast guest, you can find all the information for that under Submissions Wanted. And for any game developers listening, we are always on the lookout for new panelists for roundtables throughout 2015. And you can email me through the same link about that. Also, make sure to check out our Patreon campaign to secure monthly funding for the site. You can find all the information for that under the Patreon banner on the front page. And last but not least, make sure to check out my Twitch channel, where I will play and live stream a variety of titles and talk about their design. And that all goes up on the Game Wisdom YouTube page as well. You can find me on Twitch under my handle of GWBicer. So, with that, thanks again for tuning in. We will talk to you real soon. Take care, everybody.